Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Well, hello there and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, Pope Benedict's words to the Katholikentag meeting in Mannheim, Germany, as well as a report from our correspondent there. As the Olympic flame reaches London, we find out more about the Church's involvement in the 2012 Games. And to mark the Ascension of our Lord, we bring you a musical meditation on the second glorious mystery of the Rosary. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. The German Church is holding its biannual meeting, more commonly known as Katholikentag, that's in Mannheim, where there are over 30,000 participants and guests assembled to discuss, worship, celebrate and share the current state of the Church in Germany. I reaped that information from someone who's in Mannheim right now. He is Jesuit, Father Bernd Hagenkort, and he heads our German programme. And in a few moments we'll be listening to a report he sent us. But before that, I'd like to shine the spotlight on this organisation, as well as take a look at Pope Benedict's recent words to its members. On Thursday, but before that, in September 2011, when he visited his homeland, it was from the 22nd to the 25th of September. Just to step back in time a moment and refresh your memory, the choice of cities on this second visit back to his homeland included the nation's capital, Berlin. This was his first official visit to the nation. To Erfurt, the land of Luther. And finally, Freiburg, the city whose inhabitants decided in 1520 not to take part in the Reformation, proving their independence from outside influence. The city was not named Freiburg, meaning free borough for nothing. It was here in what is Catholic territory in the southwest tip of Germany, ruled for centuries by the Catholic Habsburgs, that the Pope dedicated time to the Katholikentag, which in Germany wields a lot of influence. Even Catholic members of Parliament are dear to it, surprising at a time when Catholics and indeed Protestants have lost much of their influence in public life in Germany. This Katholikentag is an organisation called Zentralkomitee der Deutschen Katholiken, or Central Committee of German Catholics, led by its president, Mr. Alois Gluck. A lay apostolate founded in 1952, which grew out of an earlier 19th century movement, one which seamlessly combines independence with loyalty to the Church and commitment within the Church with social and political action. To them, while in Germany, the Holy Father had words which focused around new evangelization. On this occasion, among the other issues he touched on, was that of how high standards of living do not exclude poverty in human relations and poverty in the religious sphere. But let's take a look at what Pope Benedict said in a message to the Katholikentag gathering in Mannheim on Thursday. Picking up on new evangelization, he began by quoting the motto of this meeting, "Daring to begin afresh." A renewal, he said, which stems from God, must always follow a personal path which leads to God. We are called to grow in faith as well as live accordingly in our daily lives. But we're not alone or isolated from others. We believe together and within the community of the Church. The path to God begins for all faithful, both within and with the Church, he insisted. This 98th Katholikentag, Benedict XVI said, is in a sense the first step towards the year of faith, called to coincide with the 50th anniversary of the opening session of the Second Vatican Council. So, having touched there briefly on Pope Benedict's words, as promised a moment ago, why don't we go over to Mannheim and listen to Jesuit Father Bernd Hagenkor's report from there.
The book containing all the events of this Katholikentag is nearly 600 pages long. All 1,200 events show the breadth and length of the Catholic Church in Germany. There are lectures and discussions, there are presentations and new initiatives, and as during every Katholikentag, the city is strewn with white tents every one of them containing an initiative, a parish, diocese, association, or other Catholic organizations like Vatican Radio. Ecumenism, mission, parish organization, moral theology, music, social responsibility, there seems to be no topic not represented here. The whole four-day meeting is framed by liturgies and prayer services. A particular focus this year is the local church. For lack of money or of priests, many parishes had or have to be merged with other parishes, creating administrative units rather than living communities, oftentimes more than 8 or 9 parishes strong. So the focus is on how to make this work and how to bring to life this changing structure with new initiatives or ideas. This meeting of Catholics shows the signs of the times. Alois Gluck, president of the German Catholics Lay Council, which organizes the Katholikentag, comments during a press conference on the character of the event. It shows the signs of the times to the Church as well as the contribution the Church can give to society. The event wants to inspire all those coming here, says Gluck. This seems to be a rather necessary thing since the Church perceives itself as being in crisis. After the sex abuse scandals and the loss of significant numbers of Catholics, many perceive the Church as being stale or numb, without answers to today's crisis or challenges. Therefore, the title of the meeting is Aufbruch, meaning departure as well as new start. The Church, hierarchy as well as laity, want to find a way out of what Alois Gluck called the inner blockade in many questions. The price to pay is to give up a lot of much-loved customs or structures. However, this is necessary to move the Church forward, says Gluck. How to do this? To discuss that is what this Katholikentag is for. From Mannheim, Father Bernd Hagenkort for the Vatican Radio.
Time to leave Rome and go over to London. The torchbearer to carry the Olympic flame into the United Kingdom was 3-time Olympic gold medalist Ben Ainslie. It ends its route on Friday in London after first being lit at the Temple of Hera in ancient Olympia, Greece. So as the London Olympics get closer to us in time, why not speak of the Church's involvement in the Games? He's Monsignor John Armitage, who's both chair of the Catholic 2012 Committee, as well as Catholic trustee on the board of the Olympic charity More Than Gold, a title which is a clear reference to sports being more than just winning a gold medal. He sat down with me in our studios here, and before delving specifically into the forthcoming Summer Games in London, he highlighted how the Church has always expressed an interest in sport and been present at previous Games as well. In this interview, he begins, however, by pointing to how this time round, Christian churches are working together in a special way. Just listen.
The Olympic organisers have very clearly said that they can't work with each individual denomination or church group. So they asked right at the beginning that there should be a group that works together. So we have this coalition, which has been very effective, based on a charity called More Than Gold, which is a sort of coalition of Christian churches and groups. And that's got a number of programmes that we're all working on, involved in social justice, in hospitality, in mission teams, and a whole range of different things, special events where we can work together. We have another big one, big screen events. We're encouraging churches to get a screen and screen an event and run a sort of a social event around it. Also about how to engage young people and also to engage people in volunteering. There's official volunteering for the Games, but also to volunteer to run sports activities in parishes and schools. And also, we've got a thing called Games Pastors, which is there, which we've been asked to provide Games Pastors as greeters at Heathrow Airport and Gatwick and at the major London rail terminals as well. So as people are coming into London, they'll be greeted. Now, all that's been done under More Than Gold. In addition, Catholic community have really from day one been engaged. And I think it's probably fair to say that the involvement of the Catholic community has been very significant in this. And I think experience in the past has been that the Catholic Church hasn't been there necessarily from day one. Well, with the London Olympics, we have. So we've been able to develop three strands. The first is what we are doing ecumenically. The second is what is being done under the auspices of the Catholic 2012 Committee, which I chair. And there we're looking at a number of particular programmes. The first thing is the provision of chaplaincy for the athletes and the officials. Now, this is where we've been asked to provide chaplaincy on a 24-hour basis, which is quite an ask, who will have access to the Olympic Village. Now, that will be the most secure area of the whole site, but we will have access there. We'll be having daily mass. We have our own chapel there, and we'll be having mass, probably two or three masses a day in different languages. So there will be chaplaincy support right the way throughout the whole of the Games and the Paralympic Games. So that's a very significant part of our contribution, and that is expected by the Olympic movement, that there will be support for people's religious beliefs. That is an interfaith expectation, so there'll be different ministers of different religions working there as well. So chaplaincy is a very big part of what we'll provide. Secondly, we will be looking to run hospitality ourselves, and that is that we'll be having two centres, one at Stratford, St Francis Church in Stratford, where we will be looking to have a place of welcome for any visitors who are coming along, and places where groups can come together and we can have some receptions. And also we're going to have some talks on the history of the Olympics and various events, and particularly to try and make more well known the teaching of Pope John Paul II on sport and faith. Being a great sportsman, he had much to say on sport and faith. And so we want to try and give a platform during the Olympics for some of the Holy Father's reflections on sport.
Given Monsignor Armitage has just spoken of Blessed John Paul II, I thought I'd interrupt our interview for a moment to bring you this Polish former sportsman's reflections. It's a recording from our Vatican radio archives, which dates back, as you can guess from the sound of the Pope's voice, to the early years of his pontificate. As you'll hear in a moment, he speaks of the power of sports to unite and bring people together.
Competition between athletes is a universal language which immediately goes beyond the frontiers of nation, race, and political persuasion. All of this on condition that the men and women who engage in sport, especially on the international level, foster its inherent positive values without allowing it to degenerate through excessive concern for merely material advantages or through undue subordination to partisan ideologies.
And now we've listened to Blessed John Paul II's strong words there. We might say that he enters into the long-term legacy of the Olympic Games for the Catholic community, no?
From day one, within the Catholic community, we realised that we would invest a lot in an event, which was really good, but the event would be over
pretty quickly.
Yeah. So the question from day one was, what did we want? What does a Catholic community did we want as a legacy for the Olympic Games? So we developed, certainly from the early days, a sense that we wanted to develop a proper legacy for the Catholic community. And that led to the establishment of the John Paul Foundation for Sport. We were very privileged when the Holy Father came to England 2 years ago.
Yes, that was at St Mary's, Twickenham, when he met with a group of young people from different schools and sports colleges across England. In England, there's a strong tradition of sports.
Very strong tradition.
Within school.
Yeah. That's right. A very strong tradition. Foundation is there to, in some way, to continue to encourage people to reflect on John Paul's teaching, but also to help us to develop what was actually very strong in our parishes and isn't so strong now. It's very strong in our Catholic schools, that is our sports. But many parishes used to have sports clubs, boxing clubs and football clubs and rugby clubs and a whole range of different sports clubs. That's not quite so strong as it used to be. And one of the things we're hoping that the foundation will do is to encourage a new generation of sports coaches who will set up sports clubs and facilities within our parishes, and that we want to use our schools and our Catholic colleges as a way to be able to train this new generation of people. So it's trying to see sport in the best and the broadest sense of the word. Much of sport has had a very bad time because of different sorts of corruptions and scandals, and that has really undermined much. And the amount of money involved in sport very often undermines the spirit of the game. Now, we're trying through the John Paul Foundation to truly really understand, well, what is the spirit of a game? We talk about the spirit of a team. What does that actually mean? And so within the foundation, we're looking to see what that actually means and how we can find a language that will speak to the young people and the sportsmen and women of our current generation. And we feel that that would be a real legacy for the church and for our young people. And in a broader sense, the people of our country as well, because sport in England and Wales is enormous. It is absolutely massive. But there are many concerns about some of the trends, particularly about vast amounts of money that people earn. And very often certain sportsmen seem to be very distant from the people. And sport in some ways has just become a very large moneymaker, which in some ways undermines the whole spirit of the game. That before there is money, there is a game, and there is a game that has a spirit to it. How does one understand that? There's much criticism very often about parents putting pressure on their children, in terms of sport and winning. Well, certainly there is a very strong British tradition that the most important thing is that you play the game. It's playing the game that matters. If you win, it's good to win, but much more important that you play the game, you play the game well, you play the game, and that's our great tradition. It's embodied in our national game of cricket, and it's something that isn't as strong as it used to be. And one would hope that some of the legacy from the Olympics, and particularly given an inspiration by Pope John Paul II, would be that we'll learn to play the game better.
Keep young people off the streets as well.
Keep young people off the streets, indeed. Yeah. Sport is got to be one of the principal ways of engaging young people in a positive way. It's what they like to do.
Do you still do sports yourself?
I used to sail regularly on the tall ships. And that was until relatively recently. But my arthritis won't allow me to climb up the mast anymore, sadly.
So, no more sports for you and for people like yourself. But there's a whole world that revolves around the Olympic Games.
We're having a thing called the Joshua Camp. And the Joshua Camp will be for young people who want to come and be in London for the Olympics. Obviously, it's going to be very expensive. So what we're providing is basic accommodation, bed and breakfast accommodation. But also, in the mornings, there will be Mass and there will be some form of catechesis before they go out and either just walk around London or are involved in some way on a voluntary basis with some of the many programmes that have been run by different churches in London. And we hope to have in excess of 500 young people. Already, they're booking to come in. And another aspect of it is the Church St Francis Church in London, which is one of the oldest Catholic churches in London. In fact, it's where Alfred Hitchcock was baptised. St Francis Church will be having exposition of the Blessed Sacrament 24 hours a day throughout the whole of the Olympic Games. And that's a very important part as well, because we want a place where people can come and pray, but where there are also people praying.
Getting back to the sportsmen, the athletes, do you think they need that kind of spiritual support?
Well, I think if you look at the average sportsperson coming to the Olympic Games, they've invested over 4 years of their life to get to a situation where they've been selected for their national teams and then coming to the Olympics. The fact of the matter is that 96-97% of them are going to lose. Now, most of them know that, and just being in the Games in itself is a great honour. But for many people, they've invested so much, and there is a great emotional energy that goes into as well as all the physical stuff. And for many people, losing will be a real blow. And so being with people in what is a highly charged emotional environment is a very important aspect of chaplaincy. And to be able to put things in context and to be able to give them spiritual support is obviously a very important part. and to put things into perspective, I think, as well. I think one of the jobs of being a priest is sometimes is when people are in the midst of joy or tragedy or trial, one tries to give a bit of perspective and a broader vision. And I think that's one of the important things that our chaplains will do during this.
Your chaplains have pastoral experience, presumably, because yes. That's the kind of, you mentioned that right now, that's the kind of thing that you need when
yes,
you have
indeed,
to provide.
Yeah. They're all parish priests or chaplains. The chaplain to University of Oxford is one of our chaplains, and various people will be coming, but they're all very experienced in terms of the provision of pastoral care in their own particular walks of life.
And you were listening there to Monsignor John Armitage, who is both chair of the Catholic 2012 committee as well as Catholic trustee on the board of the Olympic charity More Than Gold. Our thanks go to him for sharing with us this information. Finally, to mark our Lord's Ascension, we bring you a musical meditation on the second glorious mystery of the Rosary. That's with our music historian, Monsignor Philip Whitmore, a meditation which begins with an uplifting motet.
Chelos ascendit hodie. Today he ascended into heaven. That uplifting motet for double choir is by Sir Charles Villiers Stanford, a composer little known outside the Anglo-Saxon world, but a towering figure in late Victorian England nevertheless. An Irishman by birth, he became Professor of Music at Cambridge, and he taught for many years at the Royal College of Music in London. As a Protestant, he didn't often have occasion to write Latin motets, but this piece wasn't actually written to be sung in church. It was grace before meals at an Ascension Day banquet in Trinity College, Cambridge. What a marvellous way to begin a festal meal. Chelos ascendit hodie was later published as one of three Latin motets by Stanford, all written in similar circumstances, and now in the repertoire of cathedral choirs. Many of the anthems and motets written for the Feast of the Ascension draw on the text of Psalm 47, O clap your hands. That's because verses 5 and 6 seem particularly appropriate. Was taken from a setting by Orlando Gibbons, who was organist of the Chapel Royal in London in the early 17th century. Now let's listen to a setting of the same words in Latin, written by a contemporary of Gibbons, the composer Peter Phillips, who, like so many English Catholics, had fled to the continent to escape persecution. As you can imagine, there's no shortage of fine choral music to celebrate the Feast of the Lord's Ascension. But I'd like to move on now to consider a remarkable piece of 20th century organ music, written as an extended meditation on this same mystery. L'Ascension by Olivier Messiaen was originally written for orchestra in 1933, but transcribed for organ the following year. The third movement, which we're going to hear now, was added in the organ version. It's called Transport de Joie, Joyful Cries of a Soul Beholding the Glory of Christ, which is also its own. Messiaen was a church organist himself at La Trinité in Paris for over 60 years. The French have a fine tradition of liturgical organ music and especially improvisation. It must have been wonderful to hear Messiaen improvising there Sunday after Sunday. The final movement of L'Ascension is called Prière du Christ montant vers son Père, Prayer of Christ ascending towards the Father. Messiaen bases it on a text from St. John's Gospel. Father, I have made your name known to them. Now I am not in the world any longer, but they are in the world, and I am coming to you. Slowly and calmly, the music rises, caught up in rapturous contemplation of this timeless mystery.
And warm thanks there to our music historian, Monsignor Philip Whitmore, who's currently working as an official at the Vatican's Secretariat of State. And that's all I have time for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Don't forget, we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow, so be sure to join us again then. Meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org, and then click on the English World icon. You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.